The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
This podcast is powered by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler.
So my thought process as a kid. I'm 15 years old, 16 years old. I'm like, instead of having a cone, I want to see what works and what doesn't work in live action.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Attention to Detail, the podcast. I'm your host, Coleman Ayers. Today, I got my man Jamal Crawford on here. Let's be real, Jamal probably doesn't need much of an introduction. We talked about some super interesting topics, so how he kind of trained himself growing up, how he's now approaching coaching and training his son and that team as well, in a time where youth sports can get a little bit crazy. It seems like Jamal is really doing it the right way for the right reasons, which is really refreshing to hear. We talked about one leg shots, a little bit about his time with the Clippers, etc. So without further ado, I'm super excited to get this to you guys, Jamal Crawford. All right, well, let's get right to it. We're in a little bit of a time crunch. So Jamal, appreciate you for joining me. We've been looking to connect for a little while now. So I'm glad to finally get you on here. I know you're a busy man and I've been around, out and about. So it's been tough to kind of schedule time, but I'm excited, man. And I think a lot of you for the viewers and anyone watching, they know you as a player, but I've been doing my research and I'm super interested in sharing kind of the basketball mind side of things, the coach, you know, everything that you're doing now to kind of expand from that. So I'm super excited to hear your perspective. I'm excited for everyone else to hear your perspective and hyped to have you on, man.
I'm excited to be here, man. I've been a fan, like literally my son, I'm always showing him like different techniques and different ways to go about stuff. Cause to me, to him, I'm just dad, so I don't get very far with that. So, I'm like, right? So it was funny because your stuff, it kept coming back to you and like stuff I was doing, and I'm trying to explain. It made so much sense, and it made it clear and easier for him to understand. So much respect for you. I literally had a fan in me for a while.
Hey, that's much love, man. It's crazy how the internet can do things like that. I didn't even know that until we connected, you know, less than a year ago, and you know, it's cool to see how things kind of come full circle. So speaking of your son and kind of how you have been coaching, training him, just being a support system for him, what do you like about getting kind of away from the playing side of things and now being on the coaching side of things and developing players? How do you kind of see, how do you maneuver that? What's your favorite parts of it? Just kind of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, for me, to be honest with you, I've always worked with kids. Like I've always had basketball camps. I've always had, ever since I can remember, I was always helping a kid. But with me trying to figure out my next move as far as playing, I started actually coaching my son. I went from being a parent to actually coaching him. And the kids don't know it, but that may have actually saved me just as much, because I was like, man, I should be playing. You know what I mean? I was in that mind state, and helping them and seeing their development, like, was like, you know what? It made not playing that much easier. Then I like transitioned all the way. And for me, it's like seeing them go from point A to point B, hearing technology for the first time. You know, I remember when I was an 8-9 year old kid playing on a team. I still talk to that coach, by the way, but I remember things I was taught, right, that actually stay with me forever. And so for me to play a little part in that and knowing that this is like not the beginning of their journey, but kind of really early in their journey, they're going to learn things and be able to carry things with them, you know, as they get to their adolescence and in middle school and high school and beyond. Like seeing them go from point B or point A to point C is like gratifying in a whole different way. So I actually love coaching more than anything. And then after that, like talking the game on TV, and then after that we'd be playing. And man, you could ask anybody, like nothing felt like playing. But for me, this is my favorite thing to do with basketball.
No, that's awesome to hear. And I'm interested as well in kind of your approach. Like, you have an interesting story compared to a lot of coaches, obviously. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about kind of how you grew up as well, in terms of like how you developed yourself. First off, while we're on the coaching topic, I'm curious as to what your approach or your philosophy is to not only help your son, but everyone at that age develop and get from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's just everybody's at a different place, right? And some things I may tell them, they may not understand, but I'm like looking down the road for them. So everything I do is down the road. I don't coach them based on where they are right now, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
even if I have a kid who's more athletic than every kid in the gym, I'm going to challenge him and test him to be able to add fundamentals and technique and why he's doing that. And I kind of, we're like unpacking details every session, right? About the why. Why is this going to work? Okay, you can do this move and it may work for you right now, but it's not going to work when you meet somebody just as athletic. So I'm teaching them the stuff, the why, ready, and then I'll go back and tell them why. And I'll break it down to them in a simple form, right? And so I'm always thinking long game. Even the stuff we do, we're big on nutrition. We watch film already. We're a seventh grade team, so we're watching film and nutrition. Just about the why, and you know, everything's preparation for later, you know. Right. And so, like, yeah, you like the no look three that Steph Curry does, right? But do you know how many shots per day he's doing that to even get to that part where he's confident enough to turn around and not watch it go in? You know, so the why, and then I'm like, yeah, but if you're making 1,000 shots a day, then they're like, wow, he makes 70 shots. Like, you know, so the why you're doing that. And so for me, I simplify things, but I want them thinking big picture.
No, I love that. And I think we're in kind of a world right now where even with kids, it's like, what can you do for me now? And we're doing scouting reports on 9-year-olds. And it's like, you see a lot of young athletes who kind of get, whether it's they get in their head, whether they're just, you know, they stop growing, whether they've develop their game for the now. It's tough to find that balance between succeeding now and appeasing people, and then also setting yourself up for down the line. So that's huge, and I think a lot of people can take from that. And hopefully, we start to kind of refresh the basketball community and get back to that, because I think that's where development kind of comes in a lot. And you got to have foresight to see that. So getting into a little bit of you when you were younger, when you were your son's age. One of my biggest philosophies is just kind of promoting experimentation, freestyle, and just kind of get outside the box. And I've heard you talk about that a good amount, which is a unique perspective in terms of kind of how you grew up, just playing and trying things out. So I'm interested in how you kind of developed yourself, even if it was outside of training, like how you got to the point where you were a super creative, kind of free-flowing player that you came to be.
Well, I never used a cone in my life. Like, to this day, I've never used a cone for the basketball. I just, my mindset, my thought process was the cone, it looks good right now, right? But at some point, there's going to be a 6'4", 6'5", 6'7", guy who can move. And what if that cone's staying right there? And so now that move isn't as effective if it's just on a cone. You need to actually play people. So this is my thought process as a kid. I'm 15 years old, 16 years old. I'm like, instead of having a cone, I want to see what works and what doesn't work in live action, right? So it's interesting when I watched Luka. I was watching him last night. We had him in the game, in the studio, watching the game. And his whole thing, you can tell he played basketball growing up. You can just by his pace, you can tell he played a lot of basketball. He knows when he gets to certain spots on the court what moves to do. I bet he has a certain move package or foundational piece of what he's going to do when he gets certain areas. Right. And so for me, I started trying stuff. Some stuff worked, some stuff didn't. Some stuff worked in different areas. I'm like, oh, okay. So when I get to that spot on the court, this move works a little bit more effectively. And I'm doing that. I'm collecting data the whole time. So that was my whole method. What's crazy about when I was coming up, because I came up in the N1 era, right? And so I'm coming and people are like, man, that's three stuff's not going to work. That's not going to work in a high school game, the state tournament, right? It wasn't even beyond NBA. Like, that's not going to work in high school in the state tournament when things toughen up. And I'm like, well, if I do it enough and I own my flow, like I own my game, I can do it anywhere. Because at that point, it's not about who I'm playing against. It's about me. And do I have it mastered enough that I can do it against anybody? And that was my whole thought process. And so when I played at LA Fitness, when I played in the state tournament, when I played in the University of Michigan, there was no difference. I played how I played. It wasn't for everybody, and I get that, but I played how I played, and I mastered it. I owned that flow. And so no matter who I'm playing against, I'm going to play against more athletic guys, obviously, in the NBA that I do at LA Fitness. But for me, it was never about who I was playing against. It was about me. And that's why I tell our kids now, I'm like, look, I asked them, I'm like, what's your favorite restaurant? Chick-fil-A, this or that. The reason Chick-fil-A is your favorite restaurant is because if we're in Vegas, if we're in Miami, if we're in Seattle, it tastes the same. You love Chick-fil-A. I'm like, it has to be a certain standard, right? No matter where we go, it's not about who we play. It's about us. And we know our standards. So if our standard is this high and we're not to that standard, then, you know, Chick-fil-A wasn't good that day. And that's not what we want. The fries were cold, right? They were soggy or whatever. And so that's how I kind of break it down for them. But for me growing up, it's just my flow. And I was like, oh, okay. Like the shake and bake move. I know personally, and I've never said this, I'm going to give you something. I know personally it works better on a certain side versus the other. You know what I mean? Like the move is going to shake somebody more on a certain side than the other place, because it's just, it's a certain area where there's more room for that defender to mess up. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's crazy because, like, going full circle now, the stuff that I was criticized for coming up, myself, Jason Williams, Rafer Alston, all these guys at that time, even Hot Sauce, right? Ali Mo at the time. But all those guys that are criticized for something, now the stuff that some trainers are teaching is stuff that I was doing then. Like, I swear, and it's no, like, it's big ups to all you guys, but I'm looking, I'm like, damn, they're teaching what I was doing 25 years ago when it was criticized. You know what I mean? And so it's just crazy to see things go full circle, but it's also a proud moment. Like, I'm glad you owned your flow.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's an interesting topic of how the game is just evolving. Like, I have these conversations all the time. It's like, if you just transplanted Luka or Trae Young or any of these guys into the game 20 years ago, people would think that they're crazy. And it's just because the game evolved. Yeah. Certain things become regular that weren't regular before. And now you see dudes like Victor Wembanyama and other guys taking one leg threes, and it's like, yeah, you're getting that pushback. And, you know, KD has shot a couple in a game. You know, right now it's still at the highest of high, the elite of the elite. But who knows? 20 years from now, the one leg three or one leg shot could be a dynamic shot that people are shooting.
There's tape of me shooting one leg three Clippers. I'll send you the tape.
Yeah, and it's please crazy. Do.
When I worked on it the whole summer, and so when I came back. If you ever talk to Paul Pierce, and I was doing in pickup to win games, and nobody expected to come. And Paul Pierce was like, man, you could do that at the end of a shot clock. I'm like, right. Yeah. Start doing it. Like, I asked Doc Rivers. I was like, look, I've worked on this. Here, I'll prove it to you. Can I shoot in the game? He's like, yeah, you worked on it. Go ahead. So it's crazy to see where the game is going. Like, it's crazy.
Nah, for sure. And I'm interested in this because I've been low-key promoting one leg threes. I don't want to get criticized for it too much, but I'm interested in what you think are the benefits of that, either whether it's a weight or a late shot clock type of shot, or if it's just one that, you know, maybe you're in the mid-range, you got some momentum into it. What do you think were the benefits that kind of encourage you to work on that in the offseason and bring it out in the game?
Because everything is rhythm. It's tendencies, cadence. When you see a one leg three, it takes out the rhythm. Think about it. If you're guarding me, right, at the end of a shot clock or at the end, you know I have to somehow pump fake. I have to load up, right? I have to pull up and load up off 2 feet. You know it. So you can kind of start getting the rhythm and timing of it. And you have the clock on your side, or you have just the cadence of the game on your side, right? He's going to load up, you know, left-right pull, right-left pull. If I'm doing a move and I just stop and shoot off one leg, there's no way you can react to it because you don't know it's coming.
Nah.
You know what I mean? either you're going to foul me or you're going to give me a clean look at a shot. And if you work on it, why not? It's just pushing the game forward in different ways. And so that's the benefits for me. It takes out the rhythm of a defender knowing when a shot is coming, because you can't load up like a 1-2 shot.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that can be mid-range, that can be three. That's why floaters, I think, are huge, because it's just tough to kind of pick up the rhythm of it versus like a short pull-up or something like that. And like you said, it's all about kind of unpredictability and creating a rhythm and then breaking that. So that's huge.
Hey, let me say this part before you continue on. And this is props to you. It's crazy to hear your voice on this, because I've listened to so many of your videos.
Yeah,
and watch. Even there was a video you broke down to me, and it helped me learn about myself, because all the stuff you said was stuff I was thinking. I just didn't know how to like communicate that. And I'm like, that video is dope. And this was years ago. This before you like really blew up. I'm like, this is dope, because I sent that video out to people years ago. I'm like, look, he's saying the stuff I'm thinking when I'm playing.
Nah, that's love. Nah, I appreciate that. That's big time. I mean, one of my goals is to do that. Like, I always hope that a player who I break down can see it and kind of be like, you know what? I thought this, and this was instinctual to me, but I've never really, like, processed it.
That was me.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Good.
Nah, that's amazing. That's full circle for sure. So going back to kind of the evolution of how you started shooting one leg threes, every player, I think, has this, no matter what level they are, like, they have something they work on in the offseason, right? Like, for you, it's a one leg three. Maybe for somebody, it's just putting the ball on the floor, something super simple. But you said you went to Doc and said, yo, look, I've worked on this. Is this a shot that's acceptable, whatever you want to call it, in a game? How would you suggest that young players do that now that you've done that and you're at the coach standpoint, you see the coach standpoint as well? If a player is working on something just to expand their game a little bit the entire offseason, how do you suggest that they approach their coach or just have that conversation where now something that they've expanded in their game is now acceptable in the real game setting?
I think that's it. I think it comes from the work, right? So if you work on something all summer, or you work on it for a period of time, a long period of time, and you have it in your bag, in your repertoire, where it's like, I can do this at any time on command, I think you do that. Then you do it enough, either before practice, in practice, after practice, maybe all of the above, to the point where it's your coach has utmost faith in it. Like, no, he's shown he can do this a million times. So in the game, when people are like, what is he doing? The coach can sit back like, hey, he showed he can do that. The assistant coaches, nobody's looking funny at you. Nobody's like, you know, that was crazy, because they've seen you do it every single day and you've made it at a high rate. You know what I mean? And so that's where you confidence from your coach at. So if you show him in practice, show him during practice, show him after practice that you're working on it, he's going to have more confidence to let you do it. Don't just do it and then look at your coach like, hey, you know, let me do it. Like, show him and let him get that confidence. So when you do it, whenever you decide to pull it out, he has the utmost faith and respect. And you can shoot that shot with freedom. You can shoot it not thinking, what is he going to think if I shoot the shot?
And that's the big key, because you don't want to have that mental barrier. Like, if I make it, it's going to look good. If I miss it, I'm coming out. And I think one of the big things that I try to emphasize to players, like, it's a process to add anything into your game. Like, you can start off just, whatever, trying it out, getting the feel for it, experimenting with it. I try to hurry up that process to get live defense in there ASAP. Like you were talking about a little bit earlier, I think a lot of players work on a technique or a move or a shot all summer, but they don't do it with defense. So then they come, whether it's a game, even a practice, it's any skill is going to be way different with defense than, you know, just doing it in a workout. Even if you're repping it out, you get super comfortable with it. You have to bridge that gap between doing it on air, cones, whatever, and then actually doing that with live defense is trying to stop you. So I think my process, and this goes into exactly what you're saying, that I always try to suggest to players, if you're out there listening to this, is like, try it out, whatever, get comfortable with it. Then go straight to live defense, see how it works, see what you need to adjust in it, experiment with it. Then you throw it into practice a little bit. You can try it out when it's a little bit more unstructured. Pickup games, I think, are huge for just trying new things out. And then something kind of clicks is usually what I'll experience, where you're like, all right, this is doable. I'm comfortable with this. I'm comfortable enough with this to do it in a game. And I think if players follow that rather than just trying to get straight into a shot in the game in a high-pressure situation, that's huge.
Absolutely.
So I think that's probably the process that most players are looking at. Kind of extending from that or branching off of that, you mentioned LA Fitness, right? You go there, just hoop when you were younger. What do you think the benefit of just unstructured pickup games are for young hoopers? And how would you encourage them to approach these when they go to the LA Fitness, the 24-hour, and when they go to the park to just hoop with their friends?
I think it's a lot of benefits, actually. But a couple is, one, if you play with different groups of people, right, you're going to play with people who aren't necessarily always on the same level, but you can get, I always got something out of playing pickup. I didn't care who it was against because it was never about them. Like, example, I was with the Clippers and my daughter was being born, so I had to come home. And, you know, I had a few days off. During that, I was playing LA Fitness every day just to stay in shape. And they don't know that, but it kept my conditioning up. It kept my rhythm of basketball up. You know, not touching the ball for a few days is, it's kind of weird. Your handle is the first thing where it kind of feels funny. You know what I mean? And so no matter who I was playing against, I was going game speed because it was about me. And so you're going to play with different groups of people. Some people want to shoot more. Some people don't. But work on something that day. Like some day it may be like I'm playing against the most athletic guy and I'm going to drive left that whole day if my left hand is my weakness. Or I'm not playing with a good group. So every time it's going to be off the dribble three. Like I'm going to work on just my off the dribble threes. You can get benefits out of that too because you're training in a different way. Yes. You're still doing the stuff you're training, but you're training with live bodies. You're training with live action, and that's invaluable. It gives you the one thing I don't like is guys who just train because they become masters of one. They don't learn how to play with anybody else. I think playing 5-on-5 gives you feel. It gives you a feel. It gives you, like, you don't have, when you're training, you don't have the whole court to work with. There's no other bodies out there. It gives you, you know, what it feels like to have 9 other people on the court with you. It just gives you pace. It gives you so much other stuff that you can't just get, you know. So I think they're both so needed. Training, you have to do. There's no way around it. You should want to do it. And then playing, ultimately, no matter what you work on, you have to transition to 5-on-5. So I think playing is everything.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think doing that in an unstructured environment is huge too, because, you know, players these days will play 5-6 games in a weekend, which is needed. You know, AAU travel ball is definitely a big part of the fabric of basketball culture now. But at the same time, I've been trying to encourage my players to, like, look, play on a team where you're playing less tournaments. You still play some, of course, especially when you're younger, or especially when you're older and you need to get recruited. But when you're younger, like, going to the park will probably benefit you more than going to a game where you have coaches, you're looking over your shoulder, you're looking at your parents. Like, you're not trying things out. You're afraid to fail in those games, and it's a completely different mindset.
Yeah, it allows you to experiment, like you said. Yeah. Like some of my greatest moves have come out of experiment. I haven't shown anybody but the people that were there that day at the gym, but they came out of experiment. They came out of what's another word I'm looking for? It came out of not desperation, but it came out of circumstance. It came out of somebody, you know, them double team when I didn't know they were on double. I threw the ball around both guys and went and got it. Like, I planned it, but it allowed me to experiment. I'm like, oh, I can keep that. Maybe I'll do that now in transition, not the half court. Like, you just, your mind never stops working on how to improve and get better. But it absolutely allows you to experiment, allows you confidence. And the more you can do the things you want to do with in game reps, no matter, you know, in unstructured settings, it gives you the ultimate confidence. Like, if I can do it here, I can do it anywhere. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you put that better than I was going to say it. It's like, there have been moves that I've done or shots that I've taken, or even with some of the players that I've talked to, is like, you wouldn't have done that if you weren't playing, number one, with defense, number two, in an unstructured setting where you were allowed to experiment. Like, there are a lot of things that you can see other players do and then try it out on a cone or on air or whatever, but it's just, it's not going to come out of necessity. Like, when you're playing in a game, there will be reads or be certain circumstances that happen where, again, whether it naturally happens, whether you think about it beforehand, whatever, that doesn't matter, but things will happen that you would never expect to happen when you're in the gym by yourself, and you need those things to kind of push your limits of creativity, if that makes sense. So that's huge. And then also, yeah, and then being able to fail and experiment, those are probably number one, because that kind of sets that standard. All right, so last thing, I don't want to take up too much of your time. If you were a high school athlete right now, or middle school, let's say going into high school, how would you maneuver this basketball culture between, you know, all the things that are happening with youth sports becoming huge, AAU becoming huge, but also the style of play, how that's evolving, stuff like that. Let's say you put yourself back, whatever, 20 years, and the cultural fabric of basketball was as it is, and going into 2023, how would you maneuver that?
I think for me, it's crazy because I can always tell a lot about a person from the OGs they have around them. Mm-hmm. Or the OGs they learn from, you know, because I'm not going to say father, because everybody doesn't have a father in their life, right. But they have good, solid people in their life. It could be AAU coach. It could be a community center coach. It could be just a big brother type figure. Whoever it is, somebody's giving them good information. Like, if I'm in eighth grade going to high school, I want to be challenged. I want to be pushed. I want to be the best I can be. And I want to be somewhere I can be myself, but yet grow, if that makes sense. Because I don't want to go somewhere, like say it's a big high school. I don't want to go to the high school just because it's known to be, have a big high school, but they don't see me how I see me, right? I want to go somewhere I can get better, I can grow, but also be pushed. So if it's a high school that's not quite as popular, but they're like, yo, Jamal, we want you, you know, by sophomore year, you'll probably be a starter for us. You know, we have the information you need to get better. We're going to push you. We have this alumni group of guys that went to college, that may have went to a guy that went to the NBA, maybe plays overseas, whatever it is, that can give you the information. Because I was really big on information when I was a kid. Like, I had that figured out. Quick story, Doug Christie, well, I was 16 and my name started to take off in Seattle. And Doug Christie was like, yo, I'm hearing about you. You can work out with me. I'm like, all right, cool. He said, be at this gym at 7 o'clock. I will be at that gym at 6 o'clock waiting for him. I didn't have his phone number. So our only communication came when he saw me the next day, be here Tuesday at 6, and that was it. Because for me, it was never about, you know, he's a millionaire. I'm a guy struggling. It was never about getting a pair of shoes. Nothing. It was like, yo, I want the information to be a pro, because that's all I thought about, right? And so that part growing up, going back to now, if I'm in eighth grade, I want somewhere that can give me the information. Because if I really want to do this, I need somebody that knows much more than me about how to get to where I want to go. Right. So I want to be pushed. I want to grow. I want the information. I want to be able to be myself, but yet still build upon that and learn other things I don't know.
That's huge. And sometimes that's uncomfortable, right? Like being pushed. It's very uncomfortable in that situation. Very uncomfortable.
I coach kids, right? And our team was, I think we finished 13th in the country last year. We may be even higher this year, but that's here nor there. My point is, I know the kids who, and I see them all the time, some I don't coach. In second grade, they were the only ones on the team that can dribble, right? So they're used to dribbling. They can only play. Now it's eighth grade. They can only play one way dribbling. Chances are, at some point, you're not going to be able to dribble as much, right? Like, you're not going to be able to dribble the air off the ball and then, like, hey, can these guys play with you? As you continue to grow in your game and you continue to go up levels, you're going to play with better players every stage. And those guys have to be able to play too. So now how are you effective if you can't dribble as much? You got to be a better catch and shoot guy. You got to play off the closeout. You got to be able to play the pick and roll. You got to play the weak side defense. And, like, don't ever lose your dribbling fabric. But now let's add tools to your tool belt. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's cute when you're young, because you're, you know, these kids, when they're really young, they're the only one on the team that could dribble. They get all the shots, they get, right? But as you grow older, you have to start to have I'm like, do you want it hard now? Well, you have to learn to play without the bar. Do you want it hard later? Well, now you go to high school, like, hey, that's not going to work. And that's your first piece of adversity. You're like, man, I don't know how to handle this. This is crazy. So let's get it hard now and let's make the transition now. That's what I think about.
No, that's a fact. That's a great word. And I think that's a good way to end. And that's any age, like college players listening to it. I see it far too often. They don't want to be pushed a lot of time, not to overgeneralize, but then they go to somewhere where it's either more comfortable or it's out of their, I don't know. I don't want to say out of their league, but they go somewhere to kind of look cool rather than be in a spot that really wants them and really loves who they are.
Exactly. And I have to give a because I coach Rotary, Seattle Rotary. But I have to give a shout out to my parents too. I don't have any parents who are like, no, my son should be there, so he should be playing. They full on trust. Yeah, that's like a huge piece. They full on trust me in my vision with the team and how I see them, because our team is an AAU team, but we actually function like a real team. And so it's like, we don't think like, okay, because this guy's ranked this, he's going to start every time. No, he's going to come off the bench too. And when he's out there, he's going to play for the team. Like, and I give all of them that mindset. And that's what makes our thing special and different, I would say, from most AAU teams. And we have 11 guys. Like, what AAU team has 11 good players on the team? Like, we're 7-5 in, 5 out at times. We're winning big. But the game is about each other. And so all of them, they'll shine. I always tell them, it's enough for everybody to shine. Like, it's enough for us. We're going to play. Get tired. you go back in. But it's fun at the end of the day when you're going to those national places and you're together. You're not just bringing in new players for that tournament. Like, we're even when we lose, we got to see the same team next tournament.
Yeah. No, there's enough of that pie for everyone to eat. So that's big time.
Yeah.
I got to come check y'all out. I got it. I'm been meaning to get up there, but if I do, I'm definitely stopping by practice.
We'll be in Dallas for the final, closer to you. We may be in Georgia this year as well at some point. So, yeah.
Cool.
Now, check us out. Sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, man, I appreciate the time. It was a pleasure having you on here, seeing how full circle it is. So I appreciate the support and you giving out game to players, coaches worldwide. So much love, my man. We'll definitely stay in touch.
We're going to do a part two. Sir. For sure. Yeah, no doubt.
I already know. Appreciate it, my man.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.